On May 1st, 2007, Geneva Global, the Templeton Foundation, and Lord David Alton honored five heroes in the fight against modern slavery. The date commemorated the 200th anniversary of the abolition of the slave trade in Britain. Like William Wilberforce, who led the effort to abolish the slave trade 200 years ago, the heroes honored are leaders in their own communities. They have all seen the horrible toll of modern slavery firsthand and have taken courageous action to liberate the enslaved. Each has an amazing, inspiring story. Those honored were Ruchita Gupta of the organization Apni App in India, Fernando Lopez of Defense for Children International in Ecuador, Yane Monte of Reaching Out Romania, Alexis Danaku of Assemblies of God Relief and Development Services in Ghana, and Father Raymond D'Souza of the Diocesan Development and Welfare Society in India. Tim Ogden, Geneva Global's Chief Knowledge Officer, spoke with each of these heroes, beginning with Ruchita Gupta, whose organization Apni App helps women in India leave prostitution by providing them with skills to earn a living and support their children.
A lot of what people see in trafficking work is sort of the kick down the door of the brothels and stage a raid and pull people out. By and large, Apni App has a completely different model than that for working with it. You talk about the model that you use for what is doing the same thing, is rescuing women from prostitution that doesn't involve sort of armed raids on brothels.
We believe rescue is a much slower process, and while law enforcement officials have to do the kick down the brothel door and pull the criminals out and save the girls, that's for law enforcement. And for us, as community organizations, as NGOs, as women who want to help other women, our role is actually to create more options for women and for girls and for boys, because we believe that if there are more options available, then obviously they're not going to choose the worst option. They're going to choose the best option. And so we want to create choices for women through our work. And we are doing this by through education, through health, because, you know, if your health is not good enough, you can't do anything else, through food security and vocational skills, and linking the women to markets, helping them create cooperatives, giving them a collective strength, and additionally providing security so that they have the protection to start new lives again without the threat of the mafia. Now, this is a much slower process, but it's a more sustainable process, because these women who are learning how to cope with the existing inequalities, with the organized criminal networks, with sexism, we are telling them, no, but you are, you know, individuals, you are worth something, you can recapture your dignity, and here are the skills to do so. So, and you have access to justice systems. And today, if a trafficker comes and tries to seduce, lure, trick, coerce any of our female members or boys, he's not going to be able to do it so easily, because they have support systems, which is us, and they have skills, and they are, getting food security.
Why the art therapy program? How did you realize that this was a need? How did you realize that art was the way to address the need? And what results are you seeing?
We were working to break the cycle of intergenerational prostitution in red light areas, so that mothers who were prostituted did not have to watch when their daughters were pulled into prostitution by their brothel madams. And to do that, we thought that we have to make sure the girls go to school and complete school so that they can start different lives. So in our community centers across India, we started doing after-school help with homework for the daughters of women in prostitution, and found that the daughters or the sons, they could not pay attention to what we were teaching them. And then, of course, we realized there's psychosocial trauma. They are facing incredible violence on the streets, at home. They're seeing all kinds of things which they cannot talk about. They're subject to all kinds of things which they cannot talk about. So we had to deal with that. We started looking for child psychologists and child psychiatrists in Calcutta, and found that while there were some child psychiatrists who were willing to come to red light areas, they were not quite able to understand the specialized nature of the children's needs. So we thought, okay, fine, then we'll develop our own method with the help of child psychiatrists. And that's what we did. We decided to use art, painting and drawing, storytelling, music, dance and mime to help the children cope with what the incredible amounts of sexual violence, physical violence, abuse, trauma that was there in their lives. We pulled in some artists from Calcutta into the project who said we'll give time for free. We pulled in some dancers, some mime people, some theater people, and we pulled in some writers, short story writers. And we sat with some child psychologists and tried to work out what we can do. We did focus group discussions with some children and tried to identify what the issues were. We came up with the fact that HIV and AIDS was a big issue in red light areas, which the children had to talk about, deal with, but there was nobody to talk to them about it. So we designed this workshop in which we would take the children to some really child-friendly environment like the zoo or a water park, have fun. Then we would introduce an expert who would come and talk about a subject that the child had to deal with, like AIDS, like prostitution, like the role of the police, like violence, things like that. And then after that, we would do these drawing sessions where the children were asked to write or draw or make poems about these subjects. And then there was a sharing session where they would share it with each other. And then we would bring in the mothers. Again, all facilitated with child psychologists in the room. And so the mothers could hear about this. At the end of the process, what we found was this incredible output of work from the children, because they drew things which were so disturbing. A child looking at a girl who was surrounded by three different men, and her clothes were being pulled off, and one of the men had a stick in the hand. So, you know, you could see that these children were watching all these images, but had nowhere, no space to talk about it. What was missing was that these children were not being told how to cope with these things. So we thought that this project now can be really good, because one of the outcomes was that the children felt that it was a cathartic experience, and they got rid of a lot of the shame and the guilt. They realized it was not just their shame and their guilt, but other children and whole communities were going through this. And like one child said, she felt freer after this whole exercise. Another mother told us that her child's anger had come down and he had stopped hitting her after this whole exercise. There was a priest who was trying to start a coaching class for children in a red light area in Calcutta. And at the end of it, he said that suddenly their attention span went up and he was able to start the coaching class after we did this.
Fernando Lopez of Defense for Children International leads the fight for legal reforms to protect sexually exploited children in Ecuador.
El tráfico, yo diría que comienza a agudizarse a raíz del año 2000, en la década del año 1990.
Trafficking in Ecuador began with a major crisis back in 2000. This caused at least 60,000 people to leave the country, many illegally, and the mass exodus has continued. Families have been separated, as fathers and mothers leave to find a better life. In villages and tribes through Ecuador, traffickers tell parents that their children will be provided a better life if the parents sell their children. The boys are exploited for hard labor, and many are sold to other traffickers. In rural areas, entire families are sold the life of a better life if they move to the big cities. Parents must then force their children to beg for a survival income. Girls are told they can have a better life if they go to the cities. Once there, they are sexually exploited. But many girls who leave home and become exploited do not want to return to their families because of situations at home such as poverty, hard labor, abuse and alcoholism. Leaving home is an escape for these girls, and many allow themselves to be taken by traffickers. So just taking them out of that situation isn't enough, because they will just return to that lifestyle. They have to be provided with education and new life. We need to show girls that a better life is available to them, and we need to do that through extended counseling and vocational training. We need to give them skills that will make them earn good money. Some of these girls receive up to $2,000 a month as prostitutes, and they cannot make that kind of money by sewing or becoming a beautician. Training them in a skill that doesn't pay well isn't going to work for them. They need well-paying jobs in which they can maintain their dignity. Efforts to prevent trafficking should take two approaches. The first is to work with the communities on projects such as microcredit that will improve their harsh economic situations. And second, families often find there is no local market for the goods they produce. They should be helped to sell their products in areas where there is a market for them. Also, education needs to be seen as a way out of poverty. There is a national plan in Ecuador to prevent human trafficking, but it is only in the early stages. There are laws in place, but they are often ignored by officials. We need to be persistent with the government at the highest level of authority. We also need to coordinate the work of the various NGOs and focus efforts on specific geographic areas and issues.
Alexis Danaku's organization, Assemblies of God Relief and Development Services in Ghana, helps rehabilitate children trafficked into prostitution and domestic labor, training them to earn a living and helping them to return to their families.
In the time that you've been working, particularly with issues of trafficking, what's the biggest lesson you've learned about what works and what doesn't, and have your programs changed based on what you've seen working?
It's not been very easy, but we have seen that with commitment, passion, and conviction from the staff, and particularly the community where these girls are trafficked and sometimes even are distributed within the community. We are able to form a network with the people who matter in the community, they will show you the way and play a crucial role in the mobilization process. So the lesson we have learned from all these years is that the people they are a resource. The community is a resource that the opinion leaders also have a role to play if you are going to make a breakthrough into the community. Because the society is said that they will not accept you if you don't have somebody to show you the way. And we have also learned a lesson that if you operate in a transparent manner, the people will come to accept you and will not doubt whatever interventions that you are putting in. And the challenge has been that how do you work in repairing the relationship that has been damaged between the girls and then their family, because there's that element of mistrust between the girls and mostly from their family member, because they were not told exactly what is happening in the whole drama, only for them to get to where they are and to see that they have been deceived in the first place by these recruiters and traffickers. So how to reconcile these girls with their family, who are very important in the whole exercise of rehabilitation and reintegration. So that has been one of the major challenges that we've been having with this particular program.
Alexis, if you had $1 million to invest in the trafficking programs, what would be the best ways to invest that for maximum impact in Ghana?
It will actually go a long way to help deepen the program. But first of all, we will use that to help tackle the root cause of trafficking. And I keep on saying that women are a vehicle of development in Ghana. If you are able to empower women within the family setting, then you are helping an entire family to walk out of poverty. So we will actually devote a chunk of that money into our microcredit component, which is an integral part of our reintegration process. So that families that have already been identified as having given out their children to these traffickers will be helped with a microcredit, so that a few children that are still left behind are not also given out for the purposes of a survival strategy for the family. And also other communities that are noted or prone to trafficking will also invest part of that money in the microcredit facility, try to target women in particular. The other component will also go into research, because research is research and documentation is very, very important. We are doing all this. What are some of the lessons that we are learning? What are the challenges? So a conscious effort will be made to actually document what we are doing and probably showcase this as a good practice or a best practice model for other organizations that are also thinking of going into child trafficking or are already doing child trafficking, will probably learn from us, and then it will go a long way to actually enhance project efficiency and project effectiveness. So $1 million will make a difference in the life of them. Life will actually be transformed to the microcredit component.
We've talked about trafficking and everything that's wrong. Would you just spend a little while talking about what the goal is? When we talk about where do we want these people to be instead? We talk about a theme of liberty.
I think that what we are looking for as an organization, for the reason for which we are intervening, is that these children are victims of circumstances, they are victims of exploitation, and they are victims of injustice. And we think that it is not only an affront to their dignity, but we also think that they have the right to grow up in a loving, caring, and in a society or in a family where fear is not used as a weapon to coerce them to do things against their will. It is just an affront, and we are looking forward to seeing a situation where these children develop their full potential in an enabling environment for them to actually live a normal life just like any other child.
Father Raymond D'Souza's Diocesan Development and Welfare Society rescues child slaves in India and teaches them to be self-reliant and avoid becoming re-trafficked.
For the last 8 years, we have been involved in this issue of human trafficking and how to do the rescue, rehabilitation, and reintegrate these victims with their families. We saw the problem on human trafficking is increasing day by day. We have altogether the source places from where the victims are trafficked and the destination. So we have a state of Bihar. We have identified almost 8 districts, civil districts in Bihar. They are our source districts from where these victims are trafficked to the rest of the country. And in Uttar Pradesh, we have 5 destination districts. Most of these kids from Bihar to Uttar Pradesh, they are trafficked and they are under bondage. What we do is, in the source districts of Bihar, we have our full-time staff working with the communities. They go around in the villages. We don't have structure there. We don't have offices there. We are working with the grassroots people. As they go around in the villages, the community becomes aware and they open up and say, look, my kid has been missing for the last 8 years. Look, my kid has been taken by one of his uncle. Look, my kid has been paid for 50 rupees and he has been taken away. So the staff in Bihar, they communicate the staff in Uttar Pradesh. They too are working in the grassroots level where they don't have any offices or any structure, but they are with the community. So we have in the both the districts so-called CVCs, Community Vigilance Committees. The participants of this committee are the people of that community. So they express their problems, including the problem of trafficking. So we network with both the staff in Bihar and Uttar Pradesh and communicate each other. And we create a map where this victim could be, where this kid could be. So we know for some reasons there are kids in thousands in the looms, where the carpets are made, in the hotels, in the restaurants, or maybe in the railway platforms for begging. So these are the places where these kids could be. So we create a map, and with the help of the district administration, we conduct the rescue operation, and with the help of other officials, we raid the place and rescue the kids. The second item with this is rehabilitation. We rehabilitate the kid in our own shelter. We have a license from the government to keep 40 kids for 6 months. First and foremost, the kid requires counseling, and the kid has not seen any schools, so he requires education, and more, he requires love and care, because he was a slave, he was under fear, he has lost his self-confidence, human dignity. So we try to give that childhood back to the kid in the ashram, in our shelter home. And also we have another activity in the ashram, that is the occasional training. And immediately after the month the rescue takes place, we communicate that so and so kid from so and so district in the hometown is rescued. So the staff back at home there, they try to locate the parents immediately. And once there it is confirmed that this kid belonged to that family in that community in that district, so it is easy for us to work with the community also, work with the families also. So the 6 months stay in the ashram, in the shelter home, we try to reintegrate this kid with the family. We try to give 300 rupees, the Indian currency, as a stipend for the kid. This amount is used as an immediate help once the kid is back at home for his rehabilitation. We also, with our donors, with our other partners, try to give some kind of financial support as an income generation for the families, because of that, the kid is going away from the family. This is what we give more stress, that these kids are rehabilitated properly, reintegrated properly, so that they may not become the victims again of this trafficking.
Jana Matte's organization, Reaching Out Romania, provides shelter for trafficking victims from Romania and enables them to live independent lives.
How important is prevention, education, or other forms of prevention as opposed to rescue? What works, what doesn't?
You have to define prevention. If we talk about education, raising awareness, coming in school, talking to the children, that's raising awareness and education. It's good, but prevention on any issue, it means to see the root cause and address the root cause. The root cause is lack of job offers in Romania. And that's the only way you can do prevention on trafficking. I'm talking about creating jobs for the girls. That's prevention.
One of the questions that many people have is how to invest so that something actually happens. Can I ask you to talk about both what you've seen people spend money on that wasn't worth it, and then if you had $1 million to invest, where would you put it?
I need a little bit more than $1 million to begin with that. Honestly, I would split it. There are so many organizations in Romania dealing with women issues or abused children. And I think that these community development projects are so viable. It's not such a big deal to start a small project in a small community, empower that community, and give them the power to decide their fate, rather than waiting for the government to change policies and, I don't know, to increase wages and to create some jobs around the community.
In terms of what people have done that you don't think is successful, that you've said, if only we could have spent that money doing something else.
In the last 9 years, I've seen programs like prevention campaigns, going in school and talking, education, raising awareness. It's important. But I think 2 years in Romania, nothing was done on trafficking but talking about trafficking, talking to children. And no one took the time to measure the results of this. This is what I don't understand. Because you throw some money into a program without measuring the results. Normally, if these raising awareness campaigns would have worked, we should have seen a decrease in number. Yeah, well, we have an increase in number. Manuals, training manuals for police, for judges, for prosecutors, for you name them, we have them all. Manuals to train everyone. Manuals that are collecting dust on a shelf. It's not the manual that they need. It's changing mentality.
One of the things that we've talked about often together is the need to pursue the traffickers and not just looking at the victims. What do you think needs to be done to pursue the traffickers? What is it that's not being done that should be done?
Well, lock them and throw the key away. Seize the property. Go after everything they have, because we've been in prisons doing interviews with traffickers, and you ask the question, what are you doing when you go out of prison? And they're laughing. They're laughing all the way out, in and out, saying, of course I'll do the same business. Because it's low risk, high pay. Why is it low risk? No one pays attention to that. Everyone thinks, okay, this is not such a big issue, or we talk about illegal migration, or we talk about prostitution, we talk about everything else, but about trafficking, not trafficking, slavery, people being sold, and we just let them go away with it. So I think it's so easy. You have the testimony of the girls. You can do surveillance. I don't need to mention all these things because the prosecutors and the judges are already know that. It's not so difficult. It's the same as going after a drug trafficker. Mm-hmm. Why is it that people are so upset and determined to put these people away and to seize the property. They're, after all, selling drugs. But they're not interested in putting people who are selling human beings away and throw the key. That's simple. And then use the money, because they have lots of money. Before they spend the money on lawyers, use this money to assist the victims.
We've talked about trafficking and everything that's wrong. Would you just spend a little while talking about what the goal is? Where do we want these people to be instead?
I want them to have access to education. I want them to see the alternative. I want them to have a life free of abuse. I want them to be able to make their own choices.
In the words of Geneva Global CEO Steve Beck, "We came together to commemorate the achievements of the 19th century abolitionists, celebrate the work of these five local heroes, and confront the problem of slavery today. We remember that there are still 27 million people worldwide living in slavery. The five 21st century abolitionists we honor share the same determination and righteous indignation of their 19th century forebears. Like William Wilberforce and Thomas Clarkson, they have successfully mobilized civil society, government, and law enforcement to fight slavery and human trafficking in their communities. But their efforts alone will not eradicate the problem. Their strategies and results should be studied and used as models for organizations and countries to follow." Geneva Global offers opportunities to help modern abolitionists fighting slavery in places such as West Africa and North India. The West Africa Human Liberty Initiative combats child sex trafficking and forced labor in Ghana and Togo through education, advocacy, legal reform, vocational training, and income-generating activities. The North India Human Liberty Initiative focuses on women and children, addressing sex slavery, as well as forced labor in carpet factories and stone mines. This initiative will warn vulnerable people about the risks they face, rescue and restore victims, and equip local activists to push for stronger laws and law enforcement. To learn how you can join the struggle against modern slavery, contact your Geneva Global advisory team or call Geneva Global at 1-610-254-0000 or toll-free in the United States at 1-866-7-GENEVA.